11.
Sore. Every part of Martin Banks was sore, including his mood. It felt good to stretch out, though. He opened his eyes just a bit. He saw a wall made up of broad, flat stones mortared together. There was a narrow window made of a very crude glass letting in sunlight, staining it a sickly brownish-yellow color in the process. Martin inhaled. His ribs hurt. There was an aroma in the air. He didn't know what it was. He just knew that he wanted to smell more of it, preferably while eating whatever was making it. It wasn't bacon, eggs, and coffee. It wasn't toast. It didn't smell breakfasty at all. It smelled beefy, with some onion and other vegetables thrown in. He smiled and thought, "It smells like stew." Martin sat bolt upright, instantly enraged. Philip was sitting at the foot of the bed in his blue robe. In his hands there was a large, steaming bowl. "Stew?" he asked, pushing the bowl forward invitingly.
"You! How..."
Martin sputtered with rage.
"How did you do that? How'd I get here? How long have I been unconscious? What did you do to me? Give me that stew!"
Philip laughed and gave him the stew. Martin ate greedily and angrily. He was lying on top of the bedding, fully clothed, but with his shoes removed. Philip walked over to the corner where a cooking pot hung over a small fire. It was a medium-sized room with stone walls, simple furnishings, and exposed rafters. It was a room imbued with the kind of simplicity that the rich could afford and the poor saved up to get rid of. Homey though it was, the dirt floor and the open fire reminded Martin exactly where and when he was. Philip picked up a jug and poured some of its contents into a rough clay mug.
"Good morning, Martin. I'll answer your questions, but not in order. You've slept about 9 hours. Gwen, the young lady who brought you into town, and I went out into the woods to find you as soon as we could after the duel. We found you unconscious, floating about 3 feet above the ground. You were just lying there, vibrating. It looked like you'd bounced off of a few trees before you came to a stop."
Philip put down the jug and walked toward Martin.
"We gathered up all of your belongings. I put everything in a pile over there by the wall. Everything but this."
He held up Martin's phone. Martin stopped eating.
"Don't worry. I haven't tampered with it. I know better than to mess with things I don't understand. I pushed the glowing square that said hover, thinking it'd bring you back to the ground. It did. Much more violently than I expected."
Philip was now standing right next to the bed. Martin watched him warily.
"Now, your most important question, what have I done to you? The answer, Martin, is that I tried to talk you out of making a fool of yourself, and watched you do it anyway. Then I traipsed through the woods in the dark, gathered your belongings, and snuck you back into town. I gave you a safe place to sleep, and watched over you in case your injuries were more severe than they looked. And now I've given you a nice bowl of stew. My point is, if I had any intention of hurting you, I'd have done so while you were asleep, or simply left you alone to hurt yourself. I didn't. That should prove my goodwill. Agreed?"
Martin nodded and started shoveling the stew into his mouth again.
"Good."
Philip offered the clay drinking cup.
"Have some of this to wash your stew down."
"What is it?"
"Beer."
Martin took the cup.
"That's lesson one, Martin. Don't drink the water unless you've boiled it to within an inch of its life. If you want to stay healthy, stick to wine and beer. The alcohol kills the bacteria."
"What do you mean, lesson one?"
Martin asked with his mouth full.
"Well,"
Philip said, returning to his seat at the foot of the bed,
"that brings us to your last unanswered question. How did I do that?"
Martin stopped eating.
"Don't stop eating. You're clearly famished. Try some of the beer."
Martin took a large mouthful of beer. Philip asked,
"Did Pink Floyd ever get back together?"
Martin ejected a large amount of beer through his nostrils. Philip made no attempt to hide his enjoyment.
My name is Philip McCall. I was born in London in 1948. My family immigrated to America in the 70s. I graduated from MIT. In 1983, I was snooping around AT&T's mainframe, and I found a copy of the same file I suspect you found.
Martin put down the empty stew bowl. He kept the beer.
So I'm not the first person to find the file?
No.
How many copies of the file are there? Has anyone else found it?
Many people. We can't know for sure how many. As for the file, there's only one file. What we find aren't copies, just, I guess you could call them projections, ghost images of the one true file that show through into our reality. I think it's some kind of glitch. Anyway, we've proven that changes made to the file on one server instantly affects all other instances of the file in real time.
Well, the fact that you found the file, too, certainly explains how you did what you did last night.
Yes. Sorry, I didn't want it to come to that, but you forced my hand.
No, I get that. I'm sorry, Martin shrugged. I feel like an idiot.
No,
Philip said.
You're not an idiot. You just thought I was.
The whole pass to escape to, and I picked a time and place that's already taken? What are the odds?
Pretty good, actually. I assume you read the Cox book?
What?
Martin asked.
The Cox book. The Best Years to Live in Medieval England by Gilbert Cox.
Martin dimly recalled the Amazon page describing the book that he had decided to trust after reading its title and the first sentence of its description.
Oh, yeah, that book! Yeah, that is what made me pick this year,
he said. Philip's face lit up.
Good, isn't it? Really makes history come alive. It's not perfect, of course, but it's amazing how much he got right.
I haven't read it, Martin said.
Pardon?
I haven't read it, Martin repeated.
If you haven't read the book, I suppose you must have seen the BBC documentary series he made. They ran it in America on PBS.
No, didn't see it.
None of it? There were four episodes.
Martin shook his head.
No, sorry.
Did you read one of his follow-up books?
No, I read the title and a synopsis.
A synopsis?
Martin shrugged.
Part of the synopsis.
Ah, yes, Philip said. You're an American.
Was it my accent that gave me away?
Martin asked.
Partly. The Cox book is what led the rest of us here as well. Once we got settled, we went in and set up a script that buys a number of copies every year to keep it in print. We want to lure as many people who discover the file here as possible. All the copies are delivered to a warehouse in Cornwall. I'm sure we've made Mr. Cox's descendants quite rich. You should really read the book, Martin. It makes a good case for this time. Relative stability, good crop yields, the Crusades keeping the violence far away. Good stuff.
Philip could see that he was losing Martin.
More stew?
He asked.
Please, you said we set up. How many others are here?
Philip took the empty bowl over to the stew pot.
20-some. It's hard to say. People drop in and out, go back to their own time, check out other periods in history. That's just the people we've identified, mind you, the ones we met because they chose to come back to medieval England and be a wizard.
It never occurred to me to go anywhere else.
Me either. I think that's because we're both white males of European descent. We're in occasional contact with a group of sorcerers living in 8th century Baghdad, and of course Atlantis.
Atlantis is real?
Oh, yes. Most of the women who find the file end up going there to live. What can I say? A lady's like a man with a swimmer's build.
They sat in silence for a moment while Martin dug into his second helping of stew.
You were hungry, weren't you?
Philip asked.
Okay, my turn to ask a few questions. Where and when are you from, Martin?
Seattle, 2012. And no, Pink Floyd doesn't ever really get back together. Three of them put out some pretty good albums without Roger Waters, but it's not the same. They did a one-off performance for charity, but then the pianist died, and that was pretty much that.
Shame. How long have you been in this time?
Less than a day.
You got into an impressive amount of trouble in that time. How long ago did you find the file?
Martin thought for a moment, then answered.
A week ago.
And I get the impression from your general lack of preparedness that you fled here. It seems you have a talent for getting into trouble. That pocket-sized computer of yours, are they common in your time?
Yeah, almost everyone has one.
The future must be great. I accessed the file on a Commodore 64 and an acoustic coupler.
You should go to the future and check it out.
You know I can't. You must have tried to go to the future. We all try it. We can't go there because it hasn't happened yet.
Martin furrowed his brow.
Well, I can't, because that's really the future, but your future is the past. At least part of it is.
From your point of view. Get used to hearing that phrase, Martin, and get used to hating it. From your point of view, I'm a walking time capsule from the primitive yesteryear of 1984. But from my point of view, anything beyond the day I left my time and came here has not happened.
But I'm here, and I'm from your future.
No, I'm from your past. We're both here in our past, so whatever infernal program uses the file can access this time from its memory and put us here together. But in the 80s, when it processed my life, you, your pocket computer, your clothes, none of it exists.
Maybe I could take you to the future with me.
Maybe you could, but you won't. You're not the first person from my future to turn up, you know. And they all start out saying, sure, Philip, I'll take you to the future. But then later it's all, I don't know, Philip, what if one of us ceases to exist? And how can I argue with that?
That's gotta be frustrating.
Frustrating doesn't do it justice! All I get are dribs and drabs of information that come up in conversation, most of which I don't understand. Near as I can tell, all of popular culture and most of the English language gets taken over sometime in the early 90s by something called The Simpsons. I know this because nobody from that time or later seems to be able to put a sentence together without quoting them. Then everybody giggles like idiots, and if I ask them to explain, all anybody ever does is laugh and ask me a condescending question about Bananarama.
Martin managed to not smile. Philip took a calming breath, then continued his questions.
So, what kind of trouble did you get into? Did you get caught manipulating your bank balance?
Yes, how did you know?
Lots of us get pinched that way.
Did you?
No, I actually managed to keep things together for a year before I was found out. I had a good-paying job I enjoyed, so once I proved that I could change my balance, I didn't have to.
How did you get found?
Well, I had a lot of time to play with the file before I had to flee. I found a little chunk of code that you could append to any variable in the file to make it a constant.
That's how you could fly so smoothly.
Exactly. Instead of having to reset my altitude several times a second, I can just set it for a given height and have it stay there. Then I can fly. That's just one of the ways that replacing a variable in the file with a constant can be helpful. It has many more applications, most of which I'll tell you about later. Anyway, I bought a car. Are you familiar with the Pontiac Fiero?
Yeah, a little Italian-looking job. Weren't they lemons?
Mine wasn't. I found my car's entry in the file and played with it until I found its base rate of decay. I reset it to zero and made it a constant. I also gave it an unrealistic amount of power, because that's what you do. And it never ran out of gas.
Nice.
Thanks. But it's what got me nicked. A year goes by, and one day I get a letter from Pontiac. It says that mine is the only Fiero in existence that hasn't had to be brought in within the first year for some major repair, and that they'd like to buy it back so they can tear it apart and figure out what they did right. I should have just reset its variables and sold it to them for a huge profit, but I said no. So, Pontiac, being a major corporation, sends a guy to steal it. He's not ready for the extra horsepower and immediately drives it into a wall.
Was he hurt?
Neither he nor the car were hurt.
The wall, however, came down directly on the car without even scratching its paint. Martin chuckled. That would look suspicious.
Indeed. I didn't want to explain, so I came here.
Martin nodded.
And found that others had gotten here before you.
No, I was here alone. Just me and the locals.
So you were the first?
That depends on how you look at it. I arrived in this time first, but someone might have found the file before me, but picked a destination time that hasn't arrived yet. What we can say is that I'm the person from the earliest date that has arrived at this point in the past so far. The second guy to arrive, Jimmy, found the file 2 years after I did, but only arrived 2 weeks later than me.
There was a long pause while Martin thought about that. Finally, Philip broke the silence.
Look, Martin, would you prefer it if I call you Marty?
Would you prefer to be called Marty?
Good point, Martin. Like I said, there are a bunch of us from the future living here. We have a good thing going. We can't let anyone screw it up. And so far, you've shown a talent for screwing things up.
Martin tensed. His eyes involuntarily dashed to his smartphone in Philip's hand. Philip noticed and smiled.
Don't worry, Martin. You're in no danger.
Philip watched as Martin failed to relax. Philip smiled and handed the smartphone to Martin.
Better?
Martin relaxed. If Philip meant to harm him, he wouldn't hand him a means of escape.
As I was saying, Philip continued, I've lived here over a decade. It's my home, and most of the other wizards feel the same. We can't let anybody mess it up, so we've developed a sort of training program. If you want to stay in this time, you'll hang around with me for a while. I'll explain the basics of how we operate, tell you the rules, and teach you the skills you'll need to make a living as a wizard, which is a pretty cushy life. When I think you're ready, we'll go introduce you to the chairman, and you'll face the trials.
If I pass?
You know the program you have running on that pocket computer of yours to access the file? We have a program that's similar, but ours has been under continuous development for a decade. It gives us powers beyond anything you've imagined. If you pass, you'll have full access and the ability to develop and submit new powers for approval.
What kind of powers are we talking about?
The only power you need to know about to make your decision is the power to lead a life where you're free to pursue whatever seems interesting without the pressure of keeping a job or paying off a car loan or a mortgage. We live like gentlemen of leisure. Our greatest challenge is looking busy. Welcome to wizarding. Your last hard day was yesterday.
What if I fail the trials?
That's a less pleasant story. We send you back to your own time, and we cut off all future access to the file.
You can do that?
Yes.
But what if in my own time I'm headed to jail?
Then you go to jail. Sorry, but you made that bed yourself. We're not responsible for what you've done. If it's that bad, we're probably doing a good deed by preventing you from doing more of it. I think you'll pass, though. I looked at your pocket computer program, and the fact that there are no functions that can be used as a weapon speaks well of you. Last night you demonstrated that you can talk the talk of a wizard. You showed a flair for the dramatic, and quite a bit of creativity. Thanks for all the cling film, by the way. I told Pete that it was useful for covering food, and he tried to make a pot lid out of it. It melted.
Must have ruined whatever he was cooking.
Even with our powers, we can't do anything worse to food than have it be cooked by Pete. Look, don't worry too much about the trials. If I didn't think you'd work out, you'd have woken up in your own time this morning.
You'd do that?
We've done it before. Marty, we discovered the file, and we here have devised the shell program that helps us manage it. If we don't police its use, nobody will. There was one guy, Todd was his name, Awful little man. He passed the training just fine, then immediately started doing terrible things. We knew he had fled here to avoid arrest, so we sent him back to his time and cut off his access to the file. Also, just to make sure he didn't evade capture, we sent him to a public place, naked and hog-tied.
Martin imagined himself rematerializing in his old bedroom with no means of escape, the feeling of helplessness as the agent stormed in, the looks on his parents' faces as he was dragged away, their embarrassment at being unable to explain why he'd stripped naked and how he'd hog-tied himself. He couldn't let that happen. Martin held up his phone.
And what if I just flee to another time and place?
We'd take that as intent to do wrong, cut off your access and send you back to your time. Now that we're aware of you, we can edit your parameters without you present.
Yeah, I suppose you could.
Now what if I refuse the training?
We send you back to your own time and cut off your access to the file.
Just like if I fail the training.
Yes. We consider correctly answering the question, do you accept the training to be part of the training? Get that question wrong and you fail the training.
Do you train everyone? Martin asked.
No. Whoever's closest to where a new wizard appears makes initial contact. Then we sort of take turns training people. If all goes well, you'll train someone someday. If we were going according to the schedule, I'd be shipping you off to Norway to be trained by a Magnus.
What's a Magnus? Martin asked.
A wizard named Magnus. There are two of them in Norway.
How many wizards are there in Norway?
Two. But after seeing that display of showmanship last night, I've jumped ahead in line. I want to train you myself. You're going to be sort of a special project.
Martin wasn't sure if that sounded promising or not. Philip spread his arms wide.
So what do you say, Marty? Do you accept the training?
Before I answer, can I ask a question?
Sure.
If I become a wizard, do I have to be celibate?
This seemed to puzzle Philip.
No, you don't have to be celibate. You can be if that's your thing.
Martin waved his hand dismissively.
Never mind, forget I asked. Yes, I accept the training.
Excellent. The first step is to get you a proper robe and hat.